Hey Pacers fans, this is Victor Oladipo, and you're listening to the Sideline Guys Podcast.
We welcome you back to a Sideline Guys Podcast alongside Jeremiah Johnson. I'm Pat Boylan. We took a bit of an in-depth look at the Pacers offseason, at least up to date, last week, and we teased a little bit ahead to looking more at the NBA. The landscape has changed dramatically, and look, this is not any sort of like breaking news or even reacting to the breaking news podcast, because a lot of these moves happened half a month ago, a few weeks ago. But still, I think it's good to kind of sit down while everything seems to have settled and take just kind of an early pulse on where the league might be, where everything stands. I think we've gotten to a point now where there are 7, 8, 9 teams that probably feel like if things go right there for this upcoming season that they could be realistic title contenders. And we can discuss whether the Pacers are in that group or not. It's obviously difficult to project without knowing when Victor Oladipo is going to come back and at what level of health. I think if he were to be fully healthy, you'd put the Pacers in that grouping. But at least one aspect from a general NBA perspective that I like is I can make a case for a lot of teams right now. And I think there's been a lot of discussion. We've seen a couple articles recently about the mid-markets and how they kind of fare with some of these top teams. Well, I would argue that even though there was a lot of all-star movement and none of those quote-unquote all-stars came to Indiana, the league getting more balanced overall, in my opinion, is a good thing for the Pacers. They don't have to look at a Golden State type team, type super team anymore. There's a lot of teams that I think are really good or very fit the very good category, but I'm not sure there's any greats right now.
It's one of those seasons where I think whoever is on the nationally broadcast game on a Thursday night, on a Wednesday night, or on a Friday night, obviously, if you're watching the Pacers, we hope you're watching on Fox Sports Indiana. My point would be, whoever is playing, there is a good chance it's a matchup that you might be interested in. Because as Pat said, you know, as you said, Pat, probably 12 to 13 teams when the season tips off in mid to late October that you really have some curiosity about. And if the NBA can, you know, show different matchups, it's not just Celtics and Sixers, or it's not just the Warriors against the Lakers. Now, those games will be, you know, broadcast nationally and they will be high profile, but you've got some new teams that are interesting. You could put the Nets on against the Miami Heat and find that matchup interesting. Now, you could put the Pelicans on TV, which I'm guessing ESPN will choose to do so almost as much as they are able to, as long as Zion Williamson is healthy, because we have seen the early fascination and I think the impact a guy like Zion can make on the ratings. And I also do think you're accurate in saying it feels more wide open, even though it's still going to be a challenge for a team like the Pacers this year to say, yeah, you're a title contender. I kind of feel like the way this roster has been put together, it's almost being done with a 2 to 3 year window, and this is the start of it. You almost close the book on a very entertaining and enjoyable, a satisfying chapter last season, really a 2 year run that we gave credit to some of the outgoing Pacers in our last podcast, and you're now kind of starting fresh and you're looking forward, and you're not just saying, this is all in for this season. You're saying the next 2 to 3 years you want to build up, not to say you'd be satisfied with getting to the Eastern Conference playoffs and losing in the first round. I don't think that anyone in this building, the Bankers Life Fieldhouse or the St. Vincent Center, believes that. But it's kind of thinking big picture, but knowing that you have a shot moving forward. And I think the NBA is in a better spot right now because more teams feel like they have a shot. This time last year, did anyone think that it wouldn't be the Warriors in the finals? And, you know, the Eastern Conference ended up, I think, differently than a lot of people thought it would, and the champion is not who many expected. So even though people thought last July it was the Warriors' title, it didn't end up happening that way. Now, injuries played a factor, and that will always happen, but I do feel like you go into this offseason or into the season during this offseason with more teams feel like they have a shot, more interest around the league with you know, fans of the Portland Trailblazers saying, why not us this year? Fans of the Denver Nuggets saying, you know what, I want to have a championship parade. I think we have a chance. And then you have some of the big market teams that have been on the outside looking in. There's a realistic expectation that some of those big market teams are going to be in the playoffs when they haven't been for the last few years. I particularly don't care about that, but I'm guessing the NBA wouldn't mind seeing one New York team in, and well, the Nets were in last year, but maybe the Lakers specifically after they've been out for a while. They probably wouldn't mind if they were in the top eight
no.
next year.
No, I think the NBA would be okay with that. I mean, it's a fascinating landscape that's shaping up in Los Angeles. And I think what will be really maybe the most interesting dynamic to me to watch is teams like Denver, teams like Portland, teams like Utah on the eastern side. I'll put Indiana when healthy and what we expect out of this group in there. You've got a lot of twosomes. Like I compared it to that NBA on NBC video game. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but like where you pick two players on each side and it's an arcade style game. I mean, like the NBA
Jam.
Yeah, yeah. It was Showtime for my era, Jam gotcha. For your era. Yep. But yeah, same game.
He's heating up.
Yes,
heating up.
Yes.
Well, kind of like us. We're a twosome.
We are. Okay, yeah,
dynamic
good
duo.
Dynamic duo.
The sideline
yeah.
guys.
Yeah, and we didn't even have to have movement to create it.
Pat's heating up.
and so I think you have all these duos, but I think you maybe underlook some of these teams like Denver, who is going to say, you know, we'll see what the Lakers and the Clippers and some of these other teams that, you know, put these two stars together can build. But Denver was really, really good last year. They were really good last year. Continuity is on their side. And 1 through 8 or 9, they're probably better than a lot of these teams. And that's what's fascinating to watch for me. And I think that's what's frustrating about this Oladipo injury. I think had the Pacers had Oladipo healthy, made these offseason moves, you go into this season saying, you know, is Denver or Utah or Portland all that different from Indiana? Now, Portland, you know, maybe has a star and a half, whatever you'd call C.J. McCollum. And I think the Pacers are hoping they're going to get to that point with Turner, maybe a Sabonis, Malcolm Brogdon, but all of a sudden you've got a few teams that'll have just this, you know, they will be so top heavy with two of the top 15 players in the league, but then they'll have to fill out their roster, you know, with less than quality players than are on the Nuggets, the Utah Jazz, the Portland Trailblazers, the Indiana Pacers, the San Antonio Spurs down the line. And so that's what's most fascinating to me is like you can start playing this duo game. Is it Westbrook and Harden? Is that the best duo? Is it at some point Kyrie and Durant? Is it still Steph and Clay? Is it Kawhi and Paul George? Is it LeBron and Anthony Davis all the way down the line? But then you can also say, hey, you know, what if this league is setting up in a way that it's perfectly situated for a team like Denver, Utah, Portland, Indiana when healthy, where all of a sudden the top has come down and maybe we will start to see an importance rise on having one star and filling out your team 1 through 9 as well as a lot of those teams seem to have them.
I read a lot of the articles you referenced, Bob Kravitz's piece in The Athletic, Jay Michael in the Indianapolis Star has also written, even I think after the Paul George trade to the Clippers, I think Greg Doyle chimed in saying that the Pacers just could not compete in the current NBA. And I guess I would just try to look at the standings from last year and look at the power rankings and kind of offer our thoughts on a few teams moving forward. But there are different ways to build teams. And the one thing that I didn't really like over the last 4 or 5 years was the way the Warriors were able to add Kevin Durant when they already had Draymond, Steph, Klay. But as far as I can tell, and you know, I'm not a capologist and I'm not as smart as those that work in front offices of the NBA or the analytics writers that seem to be popping up all over the place, but it seems like that cap spike was really the reason they were able to get Kevin Durant, and that's what made that happen, and that was a little bit of an anomaly. And now this is more the real NBA where you still have to factor in max salaries and spots that you have, and the Pacers went into this offseason where, yeah, they had the ability to bring in a max player, but then if they did that, then they would have filled the rest of the roster out with, you know, minimums. And then you have to decide, is that max player worth the max contract, or would you be better off with a really good player on a still good deal but lower than the max? And, I mean, every team, it seems like, that has given max contracts to guys that aren't locks for top 5 to top 8 players in the league, they've regretted it. I mean, look at the Washington Wizards. I mean, one of the worst contracts is John Wall. And injuries, even if he was healthy, I think it would be considered a bad contract.
Russell, even Chris Paul, you know, his deal.
A year ago.
Yeah.
And so if you're in a big market, and let's say the Pacers were in, I don't know which market that the people are referring to that you have to be in to compete, but if you're on the West Coast and you had enough money and you had signed Chris Paul, last offseason. And he was, I think he'd already probably agreed to that deal when he was traded.
Right.
So it wasn't like he was a real free agent last offseason. But let's say you had the money and you were the Pacers and you acquired Chris Paul. Well, then where would you be right now? You'd be trying to figure out a way to get rid of him. So I don't buy into the notion that the small markets can't compete. I want the Pacers to be able to, if the opportunity is there to spend money, get a look. And that's the thing I do have a problem with, if there are guys that won't even pick up the phone if you call them and say, hey, just listen to what we have to say. And that's where I do think the current roster's superstars, you know, they have to recruit for you a little bit. So I think there's some merit to the fact of, I think it was Jay Michael who said, you know, well, I think it was Kendrick Perkins in his article said, you know, Victor's going to have to get on the phone and call. And I think that was one thing that Paul George was maybe always uncomfortable doing.
Agree.
And now it makes sense why, because he didn't envision himself being here
right.
that long.
Guys,
so how could he convince someone else? And it's
right.
not a player's responsibility per se to be also a front office person, but that's kind of where it is right now. And so if you're a really, really good player and you want to have another good player, Kawhi wanted to have someone with him. He did what it took to get Paul George. I think there's an opportunity there. You can see Miles or Domas making a big step forward, making a friendship with someone and saying, you know what, come play here. I can see that happening. I don't think it is impossible, even though you're in, you know, middle America, in the heartland, in Indianapolis, a place that we love, but maybe understand it's not destination for some that haven't been here. And that's why I think it's awesome that David West was so happy that TJ Warren, someone that he, you know, has taken under his wing, was so happy that he came to Indiana, because he can tell TJ, and TJ is not the A-level superstar that, you know, we're talking about in this discussion, but he can tell him how good it is to play for the Pacers, the benefits, the things that maybe aren't on the marquees in the big cities. And I guess I'll just go back to you with a final thought with this to you, Pat. But look at the last few years. I mean, the Knicks and the Nets until last year, they've been out. The Clippers have been a good franchise, but they haven't really been challenging for a title. Lob City was interesting, but I didn't feel like that they had this major advantage because they were in L.A. And I'm not even sure that for so many years, Golden State, it's not because it's San Francisco or the Bay Area or Oakland. It's because they had Steph and Clay.
Exactly.
And
who they drafted.
Right.
Yeah.
And then that and obviously, I think the Bay Area is a little cooler now than maybe it was even 5 years ago with, you know, you look at the price of houses and the tech industry and everything. I mean,
yeah.
It's one of my favorite places to go. But it didn't seem like 10 years ago everyone was just jumping to get to Golden State. I mean, that wasn't happening. They were known as a fan base that supported their team so much despite the fact that they weren't very good. And we'll look at the power rankings now. And I'll give credit to ESPN. They've got Milwaukee 1 and Denver 2. I mean, how can you say that those two teams have this inherent advantage? You have to be able to draft well, and I don't think anybody that, you know, works at the Pacers thinks that that isn't important. And then you have to be able to supplement the roster when that time is right. So right now, ESPN has the Milwaukee Bucks 1 and Denver 2. And I'll say one more thing before we maybe go into a little bit of a power rankings discussion and breakdown. I think so often in the middle of July, teams are overrated because they made splashy moves. They added new players. And you forget about the ones that were good and maybe added some fringe players. But teams that are good and stay pretty much intact, they get better. So let's go right to number two. I mean, the Denver Nuggets, I don't know whether they chose, if their first choice was to keep pretty much everything the same. But that's kind of what happened. I mean, you look, key addition is Jeremy Grant. That happened, you know, a week and a half into free agency. And that happened when the Thunder decided they're going to go a different direction. Key subtraction was Trey Lyles. You know, I like Trey, but he wasn't really in their rotation for a lot of the year, so that's not a big loss. So that's a team that was challenging for the top seed in the West almost the entire season. They're probably going to be even more healthy to start next year than they ended last year. They are a team that deserves recognition and credit, and you should be picking them top one or two and calling them a championship contender.
And if you are the number two seed, why would you not want to run it back if you're Denver, especially in their scenario? Jokic is young. Murray is young. Gary Harris is still pretty relatively young. And so there's a lot of opportunity there to just say, hey, while everybody else is bringing in these big pieces, we might have addition just by the fact that we've got a lot of guys who stand to grow and who stand to get better next year. And I wanted to put one cap to your point on the market sizes. Is Kevin Pritchard's job more challenging than Rob Pelinka? I do think it is. I think, you know, the Lakers can make every single wrong move like they did for like 5 years and still end up with LeBron James and still end up with just barely enough, even though it doesn't even look like they drafted that well. You know, I'm not sure if you go back in some of these drafts where Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram are going to be, but it's probably not where they picked them. But they just had enough to get Anthony Davis, and Anthony Davis wanted to be there. And maybe the only reason Anthony Davis demanded a trade or said he wasn't coming back was because he wanted to go to L.A. But if you look at the
he signed with Clutch, and Clutch wanted him to go to L.A.
There you go. There you go. Also true. But you look at the NBA Finals this year. Now, Golden State obviously had a huge advantage in getting Kevin Durant. But again, to your point, Kevin Durant, who barely played in the Finals, only went there once they had established greatness. He didn't go there because, oh, he was dying to be in the Bay Area or live in Oakland or live in San Francisco or whatever. He went there because they had established greatness and he was looking for a title. Before that happened, Golden State won a championship, and they won a championship, and it had absolutely nothing to do with their geography. It had everything to do with how they drafted. They hit a home run on Steph Curry, and then went and hit a home run on Klay Thompson, and then hit a home run on Draymond Green, and they put the supporting cast around that team, and they were one of the better teams, even before Kevin Durant, that we've seen in quite some time. What Golden State did, every single team in the NBA is capable of doing. It's obviously very challenging. Like, they got maybe the best player. I'd have to go back and look at a couple drafts, and they did it without drafting, like, number one or number two. Steph was...
And who knows, if they had the fourth pick or the third pick, would they have taken Steph?
Probably not. Probably not. Exactly. They're certainly not taking... Klay went 11th, I think. Like, if they were picking third or fourth that year, I'd have to go back and look at who maybe was there, and maybe they still could have, you know, built a great team. But my point is, everything that Golden State did, any team could do. Now, it takes just a brilliant stretch with a lot of luck and a lot of foresight to pull something like that off. You look then at Toronto. Before Kawhi Leonard went there, what did Toronto do that any other team couldn't? Nothing. They got a really good team. They got DeRozan and they got Lowry, and they put some good pieces around them, but they were still pretty far. And then they got themselves to the point of where they were right on the doorstep, and the right trade became available, and that pushed them over. And that, to me, would also lend credence to the aspect of kind of where the Pacers are going. They got younger. They hopefully got a little bit better. They hopefully set themselves up to get a decent amount better once, you know, these guys move into their prime. But also, there's so much talk about the tank in all of this. But Toronto's a great example. If you can build a good team, maybe Toronto wasn't a championship team before they traded for Kawhi, but they put themselves in the position where they were a move away. And they had a GM, you know, who was out there and knocking on doors and trying to figure everything out, and the right trade became available. If they were tanking, they wouldn't have been able to deal for Kawhi. They stayed right on the doorstep, and then it takes some luck, but the right move happened. And that, to me, also is a positive of you know, taking the path the Pacers are taking. I think multiple teams are, you know, kind of in this area. Maybe, you know, a Portland or a Utah is another example of a team like this. But if you're close, then you're also one move potentially away from joining the conversation with any team in the league. Toronto did it. So my response to some of this mid-market type of stuff is, smaller market type of thing is it more challenging? Yes. You know, you can't make the just bevy of errors that the Lakers made and then all of a sudden get LeBron and Anthony Davis. But the last two teams in the championship game, they didn't get there by any of these advantages, by their city or their location, or, you know, even great franchises with a lot of history like the Lakers or the Celtics might have. They got there by building it genuinely. And so, to me, that's the biggest takeaway of what has happened over the last handful of years. None of those teams, they could have been in Toronto, Indianapolis, Milwaukee, they could have been anywhere.
And I think a front office and a coaching staff knows how close a team is. And if you are close, then if there's anything we've learned over the last couple of years, if you're close and there's a move to be made, and it seems like first-round draft choices, while important because we've recognized the importance of good drafting, you go for it. And maybe you sacrifice one of those picks. If the Pacers are close in the next year or two and someone wants their 2026 and 2027 first-round pick, and you can get a top 15 player that you need at a position that's going to maybe put you over the top, Don't you think they go for it?
Yes.
100%.
Yeah.
3 or 4 years ago, these first-round picks, and you know we're seeing more teams remove protections. You get yourself in a position so when the time is right, and that is exactly what the Toronto Raptors did, is Toronto was in a position. They kind of saw the group they had a ceiling. They went for it with Kawhi Leonard. Even though the next year or two might not be as pleasant, they won a championship. That's what everybody wants. Everybody wants to win a championship. They might be a little disappointed that Kawhi Leonard did not choose to stay, and that is maybe where some of the frustration, I think, is. If you do everything right and you can't convince a guy like Kawhi to stay, well, you know what? You knew that going in. It's not like a guy that you just drafted and have had in your backyard for his entire career. You knew you had 1 year. Let's go for it. You saw the Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan combination had a ceiling, and you went for it, and you got it. And so, you know what? That's kind of, in a way, what the Rockets are doing right now.
Yeah.
Because maybe they saw a ceiling to Chris Paul, or they thought he might get hurt again when we need him the most. Russell Westbrook doesn't get hurt. Let's go for it right now. We'll give Oklahoma City some of our picks. And, you know, I don't think there are a lot of similarities between Houston and Toronto, but I see that as sort of a little bit of a parallel. And if the Pacers are in a position in February of 2021 and there's a move to be made and you want 2 first-round picks, you know, and you want to give somebody a difference, give them a difference maker, and Victor is 100% healthy, and we see the progression of Sabonis and Turner, why can't the Pacers be that team?
Agreed. And to that, to, you know, kind of close the book here on the smaller market kind of discussion, and ESPN's power rankings aren't necessarily the Bible, but like Milwaukee and Denver are 1 and 2 right now. You know, those aren't big markets at all. Denver's kind of in the middle, and Milwaukee, you know, one of the very smallest, even behind Indianapolis, I think. So, another good example. I'm going to run through here some 1 through 10.
And I will say that Kristen Ari and I did this on the ride with JMV on Monday. We went through 1 through 15, and we kind of spread out over the course of the show, said too high, too low, about right. So we'll let Pat do some commentary with some of these, and I'll chime in. And I'm not to say that all of you heard everything from that podcast or from that show. The podcast is just the interviews, and I did want to direct you to the JMV podcast, where we had a good conversation with Brian Windhorst about some of these topics that we're discussing and the Pacers specifically, and also Dan Burke. We had about 20, 25 minutes with Dan Burke just prior to him leaving for a well-deserved vacation coming off of 10 days in Las Vegas. So a conversation with Kristen Ari and myself on the Ride with JMV podcast. But some power rankings breakdown. The Bucks are 1. They had the best record in the NBA last year, so you like to see them at least be rewarded with this ranking. Too high, though?
I'll say it's okay. My concern is that Brogdon and Mirotic, well, concern might be the wrong word, because it would be a good thing for us if Brogdon is undervalued, his subtraction is undervalued. I think Brogdon meant a lot, and I think Mirotic was important. I don't think those are necessarily players they can't replace. Robin Lopez comes in, okay. Wesley Matthews comes in. I'll be interested to see what Wesley does for a season. You know, he, I thought, was pretty streaky when he was here. I think, you know, had some ups and downs, and really it was hard for him, difficult to fit in that quickly. I think, you know, he had a couple games where he was really good. But to me, subtract Brogdon and Mirotic and add Lopez and Matthews, that's an overall loss. But that's not the most important thing with them, because obviously it's Giannis. And if anything, Giannis might even take a step forward. Chris Middleton, we'll see. I like Middleton, but I'm not quite as bullish on him as others. And so you just have to see how some of these other players, you know, kind of fit around him. For now, I like Milwaukee at 1. It wouldn't shock me if they took kind of a half step back. And I don't even mean such a step back that they aren't Eastern Conference, you know, contenders and even title contenders. 60 wins is a lot. I think losing Brogdon might be a little bit more valuable. Losing Mirotic might be a little bit more valuable than some people are considering. And so I'll say 1 is fine, but if you were to ask me, I think they might go from like 60 to 56.
They probably realize the regular season win total. Sometimes a team, think about the Pacers a few years back when they did everything they could to get the 1 seed, and then you realize maybe that's not as important. I could see that win total falling down, but they should be the favorite in the Eastern Conference, solid at 1. Although I would say, is George Hill going to start at the 2? you're not going to give Wesley Matthews $2 million a year to be your starting two, right?
Probably not. Yeah. But, I mean, they have some questions, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that if you're going to give me a choice of Bledsoe or Brogdon, I'm happy the Pacers have Brogdon.
Me too.
Number two, Denver Nuggets. I'm already saying they deserve to be ranked high. I'm surprised ESPN put them ahead of the Clippers. I think that most will, when the season starts, most odds will favor the Clippers to win the Western Conference, maybe even win the championship. But right now, Denver 2, LAC 3 in the power rankings.
I've got Denver too high. I think they're going to come down a little bit. I think they're a really good team, but I'm still not even sold on who their second best player is. I think Murray has a lot of potential, and maybe he'll elevate to that. I think Gary Harris is, you know, a really nice option in your starting lineup, but I'm not sure he's, quite to the level of being that necessary second best player in the way the NBA is kind of making itself up. So I think they're too high. I could see Denver kind of dropping to the 5 or 6 type of range. And again, what they're doing and the way they're building it, I really respect it. So I like Denver. I would root, kind of casually for Denver. I'm just not sure. You look at 3 Clippers here, and you've added arguably the best player in the world. I'll say second or third best player in the world in Kawhi Leonard. He just carried a team to a championship. He's like kind of been the guy who's ended two different, different eras of greatness in the NBA super teams with the Miami Heat and then the Golden State Warriors. I think the Clippers are maybe even too low there, and maybe I'm too bullish on them. And as you know, I've kind of wavered on some of my thoughts on Paul George. I think he definitely fits the Robin role. But also, like, even with Westbrook, they never really were an elite team. So is that George? Is that Westbrook? Is that another reason? That would kind of be my only question there. But Kawhi Leonard, I think, is the best defensive player in the league, and I think Paul George is one of the better defensive players in the league. And when you add Patrick Beverley, that trio right there, I mean, imagine having to go against that pretty regularly. That's if anything, I like
it's gonna be tough to score.
I like the Clippers defense.
Yes,
maybe better than their offense.
I'm scared of it. The only thing that I find interesting, and I haven't seen or heard too many people mention this, and I haven't totally seen the lockdown starting lineup, but isn't Paul gonna be playing the 4?
Oh yeah. I wonder
isn't that the big issue from the last from 3 years ago that he didn't want to play the 4?
Yeah. By the end of his career, he'll probably be playing the 5 the way the NBA is transitioning. But, yeah, no, the 4 was too much for him in –
Because they really – it is odd that Kawhi chose Paul, and maybe he wasn't the first choice to come with him to the Clippers, but he was at least one of his – the 2 or 3 guys that he recruited to come join him or that he wanted to be with him in LAC to get that signing to happen. He's basically the same player. I mean, not the same player, but kind of the same position. When the Pacers played against Kawhi – when Paul George was on the Pacers, it was Paul who guarded Kawhi. Maybe Kawhi's like, well, there's only one guy in the league that I think can stop me, and that's Paul, so I'm going to put him on my team.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm with you. If they're healthy, I move them up. I'm going to say Denver and the Clippers are the top 2 seeds in the Western Conference. And I do think that when you've got Harrell and Lou Williams potentially still coming off your bench, it's almost not fair.
That's what the Clippers have that I think other teams don't have, is they're adding these 2 stars, but like they were built
guys that are okay coming off the bench.
Yeah, and they were built a lot like the Pacers, I thought, before all these major moves, in that really deep, a bunch of good players. The chemistry was great. And so that's, they lost Gallinari and they lost Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, which I think was a significant loss. I think he's going to be really good, but a no-brainer to make this move. Don't get me wrong. I really like the Clippers because of their depth. What's interesting to me is you look at all of these duos, and like you can make a case that half of the league has a 2 all-star type duo, including the Pacers, I think. And I can kind of poke a potential hole in almost every single one of these. Including, the Paul George angle from the Clippers. Really, the only one I might not poke a hole if everybody was healthy would be Golden State, just because we've seen Klay and Steph win a title together already. And so that's why I know that Klay is out, and I think potentially for the season. But in terms of these duos, I still find a lot of questions with them. We've seen the Sixers. I mean, we know their story. Really, really talented, but oddly talented. Like point guard, ball handler, can't shoot, and maybe your best player is a center. That's very different. Therefore, Houston is 5. This is like must-see TV. How do Westbrook and Harden work together? And I was listening to the D'Antoni podcast with Woj yesterday, and he brought up an interesting point. Woj did. The last time these two were together, Westbrook was alpha. Westbrook was the guy, and Harden was coming off the bench, and now these roles have clearly flipped. And does that cause, you know, any consternation between those two? You'd like to think that Westbrook has maybe been a little bit humbled and that he would work with him. But even then, how do those two work on the court together? I mean, these guys are like the two most ball dominant guys in the league. And anybody with
Chris
Harden,
Paul's,
I think,
pretty ball dominant.
He is.
Now, he can at least shoot a jumper. Russell Westbrook has not shown he can do that right now.
Yeah. Right. So,
I think you've got to almost make Russell Westbrook your ball dominant guy and take advantage of Harden as a shooter, and Harden thinking he would get more open looks when Russell Westbrook attacks the basket.
That's the challenge to me with them, is because are you going to take a guy who's been in the top two of the MVP candidacy like the last 4 years off the ball when that like is what he does best? But I hear you. If you take Westbrook off the ball, I don't want to say what is he, but what is he? You know? I mean, you don't want Westbrook like spotting up on the
He's
wing
gonna
for
rebound.
Threes.
He's going to rebound, miss free throws.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you stagger their minutes well, but I thought the fit between Chris Paul and James Harden was at least a little better than this fit. But ultimately, and D'Antoni talks about this in the Woj pod, you get good guys together on the floor and then you figure it out. And I would say Houston to me is a little high here for five because I think it's going to take them some time to figure this out. But
I didn't even know. I mean, forgive me for being not aware of all the moves. I wasn't aware Tyson Chandler is with the Rockets. So.
I think that was recent. That was in the last couple of days.
Yeah, and you know, to me, Westbrook and P.J. Tucker are two guys, you throw them on the court together, and it's a similar I-don't-want-to-play-against-them dynamic that we mentioned with Kawhi and P.G. because they play so hard. I don't think that Westbrook is one of the best defenders, but he plays so hard, he's so physical, and you throw more physical guys like that out there on the court, it's just hard to score. I admit I didn't love watching the Rockets play the last couple of years. I'll probably be more interested in just seeing what happens, and I also hope that our guy Eric Gordon can at least get some shots. They don't forget about him because he has an important role in that team. If they somehow let him go at any particular time, I think they'll regret it because you have to have a guy like Eric Gordon, for one, with no ego, that just, you know, throw him out there. If he doesn't get shots, he's not going to complain. But you have to get him shots. That's my point. And so hopefully he can find a role in that team. But I'm high on Houston. And I was even, to reference my continuity discussion, I was even probably higher on them than many were before the trade, just because I thought if Chris Paul doesn't get hurt in the last couple of years, you know, maybe they have a better chance, and they had the opportunity with the Golden State injuries, so no excuses last year, and that's why I think they made the move, because they probably figured if we couldn't do it last year when Golden State was dropping like flies in the conference finals and we didn't have to go against Durant, when are we going to do it? So we've gone through the top six. No real complaints.
Six being Lakers.
Oh, top five.
Top five,
I'll complain about number six. Yeah, I'll drop them down. They should be at least five spots lower.
Yes? You think they're like 10th?
11th, yeah. I'm going to say sixth seed in the West.
Okay, that's
six overall, six in the West.
I think the Lakers have one of the bigger stretches of, if they won the West, it would not surprise me. If they finished.
I did predict last year, or no, this was 2 years ago when I said, I don't even know. My anti-Cavs LeBron takes too many to count, but I said they would. I said they would miss the playoffs.
You had a correct prediction in there somewhere. I think it was last year.
Oh, it was last year.
Yeah. Okay, here's the.
I think I said no Cavs and no Lakers, and I was right about that.
You did. Yeah, I liked the Cavs, which I was
did
hoping
like
to
the Lakers
bury
last year?
That. I didn't like them, but I liked them to make the playoffs. I think I had them eighth.
Okay.
So if here's the case for them, they have, you know, still until he proves otherwise, the best player in the world. Anthony Davis is maybe a top five guy. And the problem with saying maybe top five is like, I feel like nowadays everybody just throws around top five, top three, but they name like
there's 10
guys.
Top five
right?
guys.
Right. But, you know, Davis is fantastic. If you would have told me that Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins would play together on a team again outside of New Orleans, I would have called you absolutely insane. And I'm not even saying the Lakers are wrong to do this, but isn't this fascinating? Like, we saw these two kind of run this out, and they were both good individually, but the team never really won. And so maybe it's not Davis or Cousins' fault, but they're both kind of ball-dominant bigs, and you know, who's lost more money in the last couple off seasons than DeMarcus Cousins with that injury? He's taken like $3 million deals when this guy was, you know, in line to get a max contract. I'm not sure I love that, but I am a fan of just acquiring talent and figuring it out first and foremost, so I'll let that be. But here, where I struggle with the Lakers and the Clippers, for example, is I would probably say, at least still right now, that I would have LeBron over Kawhi for one season, and that I would have that I think Davis is more talented than Paul George. But then I also like look at those two teams and I say I think the Clippers fit together better. I think their depth is better. I think their chemistry is better. And the whole thing is, like, Anthony Davis has still really never even been on a good team. They had the one team, I think, that was a 7 or an 8 seed that got swept by Golden State just before Durant went over. But there's still questions, I think, to be answered about, can you have a superstar be like a 4 or a 5? And is a superstar at a 4 or a 5 like Davis as valuable as a player that maybe isn't as talented as him in Paul George but plays on the wing? I think that's still a realistic question. Why do you not like the Lakers?
I've never seen Anthony Davis be healthy for an entire season.
Also,
now, he hasn't
point.
Had, you know, as many significant out-for-the-season type of injuries, but I never really was confident when the Pacers would get ready to play the Pelicans if he would either play in the game or not get injured at some point in the game and not return. So if you're going to take him out of the lineup for, let's say, 15 to 18 games, and then LeBron, you have to figure, he got hurt last year, he's been superhuman, but at some point, the miles catch up to you. So does LeBron get injured at some point in the season? And if either of those two happen where they miss 20 to 25 games, then what does that team do? Now, part of it is just me kind of being anti. I don't love picking success for LeBron, and I don't love doing it for the Lakers. So when they're on the same team, it's just kind of my natural go-to. I'm more of the underdog type of fan and prediction person. I'm more hesitant to say that they're going to finish 6th or 7th in the West when they get a guy like Danny Green. And, you know, then they've got Quinn Cook. I'm not sure that I think anything of that one. You mentioned DeMarcus Cousins, but I think there are just enough pieces that they're not, the cupboard is not as bare as I thought it might be when they got Davis and LeBron. And you know what? I don't know how they could pull it off, but I could see them in the middle of the season figuring out some way to get LeBron's buddy Chris Paul in the mix, because I think their point guard situation, I think Rondo's best days are behind him. I don't know how it's going to work if LeBron brings the ball up the court. Fine in the fourth quarter, but in the first and the second quarter, how can you have him really be your point guard? So if they got an experienced, talented point guard to kind of make that thing work, and if it, you know, I don't, like I said, I don't know how it would happen with the cap and everything to get Chris Paul, but he's the guy that's out there that could be available to help a team. Then they could really take off. And it's all about this year to me. I mean, I know Anthony Davis said, I'm only worried about this year. That was just a negotiating ploy. He has to be thinking about more into the future, but you can't think past at least the next 2 years with LeBron, with the age he is and how much he's played. I heard Zach Lowe referencing on his podcast, or with Simmons, I believe it was, you know, third most minutes when you count the playoffs in NBA history. So
right.
At some point,
yeah.
You're not saying, yeah, we think this going to push for a LeBron run in 2022. I mean, it is really all about this year and or next year. That's why they had to get Davis right now and not wait on his free agency. So they lost a lot, but how much did they lose? I mean, Lonzo, we'll see. I'm just going to just pick them lower just for the sake of that's what I like to do.
The Boston Celtics, did we skip somebody? No. The Boston Celtics, they have a 7th. And, okay, if they had just kept Al Horford, I would be willing to kind of buck the trend. I didn't love Boston as much as everybody else did going into last year, although I think I picked them 2nd behind Toronto in the East. If they had just kept Al Horford, I would really be willing to say I think they're even better than what a lot of people thought last year's team would have been going in. I think Kyrie is maybe a little more talented than Kemba, but I think Kemba fits in with what they're trying to do a lot better. And you remember that Boston team last year had a better record, even the last 2 years had a better record when Kyrie Irving didn't play than when he did play. It's hard to say a player that good's addition by subtraction, but when you lose Kyrie Irving and then you add an all-star point guard to your mix that fits better, I'm saying add Walker, subtract Irving is a plus. If you just kept Horford, I would be willing to get on board with what Boston has done. I think Brad Stevens is much better suited for this type of a roster than the ball dominant, the always speaking out, the, you know, potentially not a great teammate Kyrie Irving, whereas Kemba seems to be all the opposite things of that. The Horford thing still throws a loop for me, and they're going to add Enes Kanter, I think, into that spot. They lost Marcus Morris, Aaron Baines, added Romeo, and maybe Carson Edwards, too, to that mix. I think Boston is going to probably be underlooked this time, whereas they were way overrated going into last season. I think Stevens still figures out a way to get that team to be really good. Portland at 8, they're a team where, you know, they've got this fantastic backcourt. They really took a step forward last year. Whiteside in, Tolliver in, Bazemore in, Hezonja in, Turner out, Harkless out, Faruk Aminu out, Enes Kanter out. You know, I think that's probably about holding steady, although I like the Bazemore addition. I like Bazemore over Turner. And I think Portland's one of those teams where it seemed like Lillard, you know, maybe was injured for that Western Conference Finals. You never know if having that kind of experience vaults you up a little bit. And I also think Portland is one of these teams that they're right on the cusp of being a title contender, and you never know if there's another move in there. You've heard, you know, a lot of noise from other podcasts about Bradley Beal and about Kevin Love, and are they, you know, maybe just one move away from joining any of these teams in this conversation? I do know that personally, if Damian Lillard is leading my group, then I'm pretty confident in where we are heading into a season. And for Portland, not only do they have, you know, Lillard leading that group, but they've got Lillard leading a group that, you know, seems to be re-energized. And Damian has been very vocal about, you know, this is his team, this is his city, and he has no interest in leaving. He just seems like such a good leader. And when you're that talented and you're that good of a leader, I will say Portland, if anything, I think maybe they're underrated.
So if they are 8th in the NBA, you're putting them at about 5th in the Western Conference. Is that accurate? You've got 3 Eastern Conference teams ahead of them. Because that is, when I look at power rankings and too high, too low, I try to look at standings and potential seeding. And, you know, I'm going to say Portland, I'm going to say too high. I wouldn't put my faith in Hassan Whiteside personally for anything. I do think Bazemore is a better player to help them win next year than Evan Turner is. And, you know, I see a little of, with Lillard and McCollum, I see the DeRozan and Lowry as sort of, that's the ceiling is kind of second round, and maybe they just are going to have a hard time with that group. I'm a fan of the Blazers. I like, you know, they remind me a little bit in a way of the Pacers and the way they operate, and I respect their fans, but I'm going to say that's a little too high. And the team right below them, I say, should be above them. Utah Jazz, I think they will be a top 4 team. So, you know, if I'm looking at this, I've already said Nuggets, Clippers, and Rockets. I thought they were about where they should be. I'll put the Jazz up there as the other team that'll be a home court advantage first round team.
I think maybe you could look at a first round series that has Utah and Portland. I think this is way too early to start talking about playoffs, but I think that immediately, you know, that could make a lot of sense. And I'll keep Portland ahead of Utah, but I do like what Utah has done. Obviously, Conley and Boyan are big gets for them. They lose Jay Crowder, Ricky Rubio, Derek Favors, Kyle Korver. So you could argue the two best players in that mix they are adding, Conley and Bogdanovich. I don't mean to speak negatively of him, because I think so much of him and so much of what he did in Indiana, and he was the most important player for the Pacers last year. And I know you don't necessarily feel this way. I'm still a little bit on prove-it-to-me mode with Bogdanovich, and I'm not talking about as a shooter, because I think he's been a good shooter his whole pro career. But the one scenario where guys scare me just a little bit is when they have far and away their best year in a contract year, when they're not old, but they're not young anymore. And so, to me, they gave Bogdanovich a lot of money. I think he stands to reason as a pretty key player and how much success Utah has. I think Conley makes them a little better, but he's older. Do we see Boyan of last year, or do we see the Boyan where good shooter, you know, maybe a slight minus on defense, but not the dynamic Bogdanovich we saw last year?
Boyan's scoring average will go down, but his impact could be just as much. And if Mike Conley, to me, is the key, you know, he's also not young, and he's, you know, played a lot and hasn't had the deep playoff runs, but, you know, for a number of years he was a playoff participant, and he had a lot of heavy lifting to do with the Memphis Grizzlies. If he stays healthy and Donovan Mitchell maybe takes a step forward into his third NBA season, then you just need Bogdanovich to be a threat, and he doesn't have to be as much of a scorer as he was the last 2 to 3 months with the Pacers. And, I mean, you never worry about him playing. I mean, that's the thing. It's like I mentioned injury concerns with other guys, and I don't want Boyan to get hurt, but I don't even think he is jinxable. I mean, this guy is just going to throw the ball out there. He's going to play. You never knew even what injuries he had. He would just kind of shake it off. I think that he's going to be a huge piece, a difference-maker type of player. I'm going to go ahead and say right now the Jazz, I'm going to put him in the Western Conference Finals.
Wow, okay. You know, Portland was there last year, so I think clearly the door is open there. Toronto at 10, I don't like this. I don't think Toronto's a top 10 team.
I don't either. And that's still the defending NBA champion.
I know.
10. Let me ask you this, and this is where I was going to start when we talked about some of the crazy moves in the offseason. Top five teams in the Eastern Conference, could you see a scenario where maybe they aren't the same seed, but it's the same top five? Like, do you think they're top five? Because I think that Milwaukee, Philadelphia, Boston, Pacers, Toronto – are those the five best teams? Is there anybody that you're even concerned with?
I don't know if I'm going to definitively say that, but I see where you're going, in that they've lost one of the top three players in the league and Danny Green and don't have DeRozan anymore, but that there's not the bottom's not going to drop out because there's not so many teams in the East pushing to get there. So, I can see that.
So then maybe they're 12. I mean, I don't know that you put them in the bottom half of the NBA.
They did. They kind of weirdly had a better record without Kawhi during
really
the regular season.
Really good without it, but I mean, without him and Danny Green,
I don't know. Maybe you're talking me back into them, even though you're not agreeing with. You're agreeing that they're.
I don't think that they should be top 10, but I also don't think they should be lower than 14. So I shouldn't really be, you know.
Okay.
I'm gonna say they're like the fifth. My prediction would be probably fifth in the Eastern Conference, so that would put him about 12 or 13 maybe.
It's just, to me, it's a huge question. Look, I thought Siakam had a fantastic year, but it's big to all of a sudden say, are you our best player? You know, that's a big jump to go from doing these great things alongside one of the best players in the world to all of a sudden being the guy. Kyle Lowry, you know, nice point guard. I'm not where he is at his career. I think I'd have to go and count them all, but I would say a majority of Eastern Conference teams have a better top player than Kyle Lowry. You know, Gasol was huge for them, but again, in his role, Ibaka big again in his role. I don't know. Maybe I'm overestimating the Kawhi and Danny Green impact, but I could see them dropping, and I could see them even dropping kind of to the bottom two or three teams in the East. I'm not sure I would predict it, and I think your point about the top five might be dead on. But I think when you've got a guy like Kawhi, I think he's able to lift everybody up in a way that they're not going to have. And also, you know, mask some deficiencies that some of these guys have that they're not going to have. And it's one thing, you know, to every five games, everybody gives a little bit more with Kawhi not playing. It's another thing to do that for an entire year. I think the Pacers experienced that when Oladipo went out. You know, they originally lost those first three or four games, and then they had a great stretch. But ultimately, it's one thing to sprint for 2 weeks. It's another thing to try to sprint for 2 months. And so Toronto's going to have to try, in some ways, to sprint, you know, for 6 months. And so I'm going to say they're going to go down. Golden State's in here, Brooklyn, San Antonio, Miami, and then Indiana's 15. Again, I guess I don't have major problems with this just because – there's a lot of questions surrounding the Pacers to start the year. Victor Oladipo is not healthy. You're changing your point guard. You're changing your shooting guard from last year. You're changing your small forward. Your power forward is coming back, but in a different role. And so the Pacers have a ton of questions early on to answer. So I wouldn't put the Pacers 15. I think they're underrated in 15 because I don't think they're a league average team. But I understand where this is coming from. A ton of change. I think big picture you got better. I think big picture you got younger. Big picture you put yourself in a better situation from a cap standpoint. But, you know, depending on how the schedule comes out, I think we might have a more important schedule type podcast than we've had in recent years. I think, you know, having an easier schedule early on could be really beneficial. And if it's really tough, that it could be a challenge. There's a lot that's coming together here. I'm fully confident in it fitting. But if you can't have these first 20, 30 games where you dig yourself into a big hole, and then Oladipo comes back and he's still working his way back, and you're trying to figure out, you know, how he fits, and he's not 100%, that could be a challenge too. So I think they're underrated at 15. I think when you look at the talent on their roster, it's top 10, maybe even top 9, top 8 talent. But the Pacers have, unfortunately, because of the Victor Oladipo injury, a lot of ifs in terms of how this all fits, because they're going to have to try to mesh together in October, and then they're going to have to try to do it all over again whenever Oladipo comes back.
Feels like there is a lot of pressure on a guy like TJ Warren, because you're taking Thad Young out of the lineup, so then the pressure maybe is on Domantas Sabonis to, you know, defensively do some of the things that Thad did. But you're also taking Bojan Bogdanovic out, and, you know, TJ Warren was a really good three-point shooter last year, but it wasn't really something he did a lot of prior to last season. And so if the starting lineup is what we think it'll be on day one, with Jeremy Lamb as sort of the two with in place of Victor Oladipo, I'm okay with that. I mean, think about last year. If you're just simply comparing your starting two-guard at the end of the season, it was Wesley Matthews, and you're putting Jeremy Lamb in there, I'm okay with that. And, you know, as much as I love Darren Collison, I do think it's a little bit of an upgrade to have Malcolm Brogdon, especially moving forward. So the backcourt I'm okay with, especially until Victor comes back. In the front court, I'm fascinated to see what happens. But, there's going to be a lot expected, and I think he looks forward to this opportunity to play in meaningful games and to have that pressure. And that's TJ Warren. And, you know, if it doesn't work out, that's probably the one position where you kind of would say, you know, at some point you have to, maybe if you can go get a big fish, you go for it. But there aren't as many of those 3-and-D type of wings out there as there are other positions. A quick scan of maybe 16 through 20. The one team that I think is underrated, undervalued, would be the Atlanta Hawks. I'm kind of scared of them when fully healthy. The Pacers didn't see the real Hawks team in Game 82, but I think the other games they played, I think, were close and hard-fought by my memory, and I think Trae Young took a big step forward. They've got a lot of really good pieces, and I know they wanted to try to follow the Golden State model a little bit. I'm not going to say they're building a Steph and a Klay and a Draymond in Atlanta, but they've got a lot of guys that you can see if they continue to get better, and then they are in a market that you would think can go get somebody when the time is right. I think Atlanta is a playoff team next year.
I don't disagree. We'll do a playoff type of, a season prediction.
It is too early to be making these proclamations.
But I agree with you. I like what Atlanta's done, and they've done it quickly. A couple other teams I want to highlight. I think Dallas will be fascinating to watch this year. Luka Doncic, Kristaps Porzingis. I love that duo right there and kind of what they're building in Dallas. I'm not quite sure they're ready to make the playoffs. It wouldn't surprise me. Sacramento as well. You know, the De'Aaron Fox, Marvin Bagley, Buddy Hield. They kept Harrison Barnes. Now, they had to pay a lot to do it. That's not going to hurt them negatively this year, but we'll see if that hampers them at all in future seasons. And we know they added a really good leader there in Corey Joseph, who got a nice deal too. So I think Sacramento's 20. I think they're underrated. Dallas 18, I think, is maybe a little underrated. I agree with you, 22. Atlanta Hawks.
And I'll even say the Kings are another team that I think, you know, last year, I think the start of the season, everyone just automatically said one of the three worst teams, and then they contended for that playoff spot until the last week or two of the season. No reason why they can't kind of take a step forward. Some of their signings, it seems like every offseason you question them a little bit, and I'm happy for Corey Joseph, but that was a lot of money to give Kojo. But I still think that's a team to keep an eye on. And so I can't wait for the schedule to come out. I'm always of this opinion. We did ask Brian Windhorst on the radio show on Monday. I think Chris Denary said, you know, when's that schedule going to come out now? And he said, well, I've got a little bit of inside info because I may or may not be part of some ESPN coverage. And he pretty much said early August, and even it did sound like second week. You look at the way August is, it might be a couple days earlier than it has been in the past, because I think the second week will go to like the 9th or 10th maybe. So I'm kind of hoping that Thursday or Friday of the second week, I hope it doesn't go into the week after that. Pretty much right now they should be putting that thing together, because all of the key pieces are in place, and you know where Westbrook is, and you know where Paul is, and you know where Kawhi is, and the Lakers are kind of set. I'm not
anticipating the Pacers to play a Christmas Day game. The big question, Pat, will be, do the Raptors, the defending champions, do they get a Christmas Day game?
I don't know.
I thought you had to be home on Christmas.
Yeah, I don't know. Good question.
And they always complained that they were left out.
Yeah. Maybe you just – I think you give it to them. But we'll see. That will be one of the many questions that will be tackled as the season comes. Wouldn't you like to think that if there was somebody doing a podcast, though, of, like, best radio and TV sideline reporting duos in the league that, you know, we're in the top 10?
Power rankings?
Yeah.
I prefer that those articles are never done because I don't really
yeah. – these guys make millions of dollars, but it would be kind of challenging to just sit there and everybody gets to either rip or love you. I mean, we're in an industry where we're in the spotlight anyway.
I think I dislike the ripping more than I like the praise. So.
Yeah. I'm with you.
To be honest, Pat, we're probably right there in the Pacer land, kind of in the middle.
Man, low standards.
Hey, you know, I'm not saying that we deserve to be, but, you know.
Yeah.
It's
just that small market bias. He's Jeremiah Johnson. I'm Pat Boylan. I don't know. When do you think we're coming next? We did a couple here.
I don't know. This is a weekly basis now.
I mean, part of
it just depends on how much the fans want to hear from us. But I will say it's kind of been an active week. Actually, since the moratorium was lifted, I was on Sports Locker one night. I did 3 hours at JMV. I think I've had a few Big Joe show, Jeff and Big Joe show appearances. And I know you're regularly making the rounds, especially in Muncie and Fort Wayne radio, right?
Yeah, I'm the I'm the Muncie and Fort Wayne broadcaster affiliate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
fever season.
If you're dying
is...
to hear from us, I would just ask that you know you have a suggestion of something to talk about because we may not want to just randomly go into the off-season signings yet in July, and we do need to come on, I think, at least one more time prior to the schedule coming out. So. Give us some ideas, and maybe we'll even find someone around Bankers Life Fieldhouse that we can add to the podcast for an interview perspective. But once again, just to reiterate, I enjoyed hearing from Dan Burke. He was very positive about the session he saw with Malcolm Brogdon and Victor Oladipo in Las Vegas. Watched them, worked them out a little bit, and while would not really offer any insight onto when Victor might be ready, and I didn't ask him to, his positivity as someone who won't be fake positive, I thought was noteworthy. So you can hear more of that conversation with Dan Burke on the JMV podcast, and we thank you for downloading and supporting Pacer Sound. Hopefully we can have some new additions to the podcast, some new looks, maybe some bells and whistles, and advertisers this season.
that was not an accidental little
in my throat
voice catch there. He's Jeremiah Johnson. I'm Pat Boylan. We'll talk to you soon with another Sideline Guys podcast.